with your mail.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. Finally got myself together. Anyway, sad occasion with the passing of Muhammad Ali, and we're going to play some different comments from him, not this week, but coming in the coming week. I'm a fan of his. And he was the king of ding. When the bell went off, he was in. So many of us probably can't separate or identify him as a leader, but I can tell you personally that he is absolutely... he stood up, did what you hear me saying many of us should be doing. We enjoy the American way, all the benefits. We can exercise our rights, you know. So we got a number of topics we're going to talk about today, and feel free to call in 524-1080. And we're streaming live. If you're having a little problem with getting some clear signal, go to carolcox.com, click on Live Listen. You can listen there. Or go to kwai1080am.com. You can listen there. And, of course, you can go to the Internet and get all the podcasts for those of you that are interested in seeing what we talk about. We're going to talk about that ghostly Red Hill. Any of you know anything about the recent activities of the federal government and the state government and the illustrious legislators who come in with a resolution to address all these issues? We're going to talk about all of that, and I'll just leave you with this, and we'll go to Jack and Bob Justice. And that is, folks, you are faced with one of the most corrupt, and if you think that Flint, Michigan is a problem, you better start thinking again. Right here on our steps, everybody was up in arms over Red Hill, and they're rightfully so. And the military and the state health department, to include Governor David Ige, has agreed and have had or is having private meetings and making decisions and not informing the public. Now, the EPA is also involved, and they're fashioning this fancy document, but, you know, it's a matter of what's safe, what's preventable, what's not, what's honest, what's transparent. And unbeknownst to many of you, they're having secret meetings and drawing this thing out. Camp Lejeune, it was treated the same way. So I don't mean to every Sunday morning to tell you how corrupt our government is, but how can I not tell you that if I mention the word government, then you might as well equate that to there's something wrong. And yeah, I like to pick at the bad and the negative things, because the things that I see that are negative, they don't just impact one person. They impact many of us presently and in the future and generations, because chemicals kill and they modify our environment. They cause cancer. They contribute to cancer. They do all kinds of things. They contribute to the extinction of various species and you name it. So not apologizing, and if for you powerful thinkers and positive thinkers that it's always negativity. I have a separate life. But when I show up in this studio, I'm here to tell you that your government is screwing you, period. You can flip it how you want to and go off to college and come back and say it a more eloquent way. You still have corruption at its highest. The state health department conducts whole meetings. They had a task force that included two people from the public. Then Mike Gabbert and Chris Lee. And shamefully, you know, I don't know what Gabbert is up to, what he wants to do in life. But we should, everything that has taken place with Red Hill, and we'll talk about it, should be transparent. And I'm not going to make any excuses, and I'm not going to be apologetic. It's the way it is. When you're subjecting the environment and littering and poisoning the communities around these facilities, it's just wrong. Hey, Jack. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Carol. How are you this morning, sir?
I'm fine. You say Bob Justice is here?
I believe we have Bob Justice on the line, too.
You mean we're going to have Justice on the show this morning?
We got Justice.
All right. Justice. Let me see if he's... Is there any
I'm
justice
right
in the
now.
House?
How are you today?
I'm fine. I'm just looking for a little justice for my friendly folks out there listening to me. So anyway, tell me what's on your mind. You want to talk about the beach house and the closure, and then you wanted to talk about the neighborhood board.
The neighborhood board, the beach house, and Santa Claus and his junkyard. Every bit of it is being condoned by our rotten government.
Mm-hmm.
And number one, Carol, I want to thank you for all you have done to help us show what the beach house was doing to our community. The next thing I'd like to do is apologize to all those workers that were working in there that are out of a job now, and make them realize that it wasn't the community that put them out of a job for a while. It was their owner and boss, Andy Anderson.
And if they really want to complain, call the governor, David Ige, and tell him, hey, boss, You the man, you've appointed directors of these agencies, and say to him, by you delaying that and you allowing them to have so much playroom, the law is a law, and it was specific, and they had applications in for permits, and they were warned, they had conditions that said do not open until you do A, B, C, and D, right?
That's right.
So
that's right.
So the real honest is, I mean... As I said last week, I have no bones to pick with Andy Anderson, because from what I know in this town, from my historical background and observations on case after case after case, it's about government sends a wrong signal. If you put in an application, that means you can go ahead and operate in most instances. An application is just an application. But in this state, It's not that way. So the burden is on Governor David Ige. This is his administration. The burden is on Caldwell, Kurt Caldwell. He appointed the director who has to carry out and enforce the laws that were, obviously they knew about them and they had agreements, and he knew the conditions of that he had to take, what measures he had to take before he could open. But again, how do you sustain yourself? And I'm not making excuses for Andy Anderson, but it's just the way the city and the state allows business to be done.
Well, with Andy, it seems like they keep allowing it to happen continually. You know, he applied for his permit, and it was an inaccurate permit. And so they issued what they call, he says they issued him what they call a courtesy permit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm in the building trade, so I've never heard anything. I called the DPP and asked them what a courtesy permit was, and they said it doesn't exist. What he explained a courtesy permit is, since the building was so old, it didn't have any plans, that they weren't able to draw up plans.
Mm-hmm.
So what it means is that he can build whatever he wants without a permit, and then they're going to come inspect it after it's done. And it's like, you know, I build homes myself, and, you know, we have to get a permit. If I got a permit to build a fence, and I started building my house, they'd come red tag me and shut me down.
Yeah.
And then cease and desist. But
well,
this guy continued to open his business, continued to operate with their warnings of do not proceed.
Yeah. Well,
and
can I make
3 months before they could shut him down.
Can I make a suggestion? Because we're always, every day there's a new topic, or a new location, the same topic. And what I'm suggesting, let me give you a few examples. Just recently, right now ongoing, is the development at Cunia, the farm facilities. Now, we know what the rules were there and all, and look what the city and the state has allowed to develop.
That's right.
You see, so if we focus, and I'm not saying excuse Andy Anderson, I'm trying to say, pull the coattail of many of you out there that are advocating for this, is to say the real solution is our government elected officials. The real solution is not jamming at Andy Anderson. I mean, we need to do that, force him to do what's right and come into compliance. But there will be hundreds of others that get that courtesy as well, and that's what I'm speaking of. They call it courtesy. I call it nonsense. But that's the way, and we're going to talk in the next hour, actually a facility that has been fined some $113,000 for pollution and lack of compliance in running an auto yard, and the government got him into a program where he pays $500 a month for penalties, and he gets to operate off the hook. So that's just, not to take issue, but I think we need to, if we're going to be successful, in my opinion, we need to lay it in. David Ige said he'd be transparent and he was going to see a new government. Then we need to see that. Kurt Caldwell said, well, we don't know what he said. Everything is a lie. But go ahead, guys.
You know, you're right. And let me say that even over on Snake Road, Kalkonohoa, the junkyard there, Carol, there's two city and county fire trucks sitting there now. How did he arrive with those on his land? Who did he buy them from? Who allowed him to buy those city and county old fire trucks and bring them to the junkyard there?
Well,
it's corruption.
Well, okay, back up here. Let's not say that everything is, like the giraffe is puzzling. It may be his pattern, but he's not puzzling. That's his existence. You can actually obtain a city bus, or you can obtain an ambulance. When they survey these ambulances and they are a handy van or any city vehicle or garbage trucks, you can, when the city says, well, we're going to eliminate that from the fleet, we put it out to bid, we offer it to other cities and counties, and if they don't want it, we'll put it out to bid. And so you'll find, go to Waianae, many of the Waimanalo, you'll see city buses parked in the backyard of people living in them.
Oh, yeah.
And so that what happens is that I don't want to demonize anyone for exercising the right or participating in a market where auctions, When the vehicle is surveyed and found to be of no use to the city or is not functioning, too costly to repair, and so someone can go in and bid. You follow? So
no, I think the problem is the fines. Like for the beach house or up on the dump up on the hill, you know, if you're getting fined $500 a month, you know, for running a illegal dump, or if you're getting fined $500 or $1,000 a day for running a 400-seat restaurant, I mean, that's nothing. They make that in the first half hour. You know, so to operate, to spend $500 a month for the junkyard, cheap. That's cheap rent. You know, mm-hmm. So I think they need to, it's kind of a double-edged sword, though. I think they need to really increase the fines so that it deters them from doing these illegal activities. Because if you look at it on a financial level, they're getting a great deal. The only problem is for the innocent person that has something happen on their property that the fines exceed. You could, mm-hmm. If they were too high, you could run them out of business. But people find those loopholes, and they abuse them. So I mm-hmm. think that would be the key, would be to raise those fines. You know, instead of $500 a month, make it $5,000 a month or $10,000 a month, to where it's not profitable for them to do it.
Yeah, some of the issues that other solutions and our legislators, as fancy as they are and as popular as they are, make dumb decisions. I mean, they don't fund. You look at the bottle bill. You look at many of the things that are related to human health and the environment, the welfare of the environment. Shoddy laws and poor approach in legislation. You know, look at illegal dumping. How many times have they come along and introduced new bills for illegal dumping? They can't get it right, right? So fines, in my opinion, fines will only be impacting little people. An individual who owns a house, that person does not have lots of money to be playing on the envelope. But a person that's got a 300-400-bed, facility, seating facility, as you say, can make that money. And if you're going to get fined $500 a month for violating environmental laws, and you're making, I don't know what they make at a dealership or auto parts, but imagine, what does one part cost? Depending on the part, right?
Right, right.
So, if in theory, the car is bought in as a junk car, but then scrap metal, he can sell that for the tonnage. But in this market, the market isn't good to support or make it worthwhile. But I think the decision to shut down the beach house was the right thing to do, because it's a set of laws that you have to before operating. It doesn't say after, it says before.
I was just reading a thing on the beach house, and the main thing about the beach house is the fish pond. The fish pond is being polluted. They've been restoring that. They use that for educational purposes for youth. I think they estimated they're going to have between 5,000 and 10,000 people, kids, coming there this summer for a program. But they had to alter that program because they can't get near the water. So everything's got to be land based now.
Mm-hmm.
That just came out this morning. That release.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that's a major concern. I mean, they're impacting our community. They're impacting the ability for us to educate our children.
Well, and
that's where the problem there lies. And then mm-hmm. there's runoff that's going into the ocean, so any kind of ocean activity in the bay right there, you have raw sewage leaking in there.
Mm-hmm. So, all that is applicable, and it applies, again, to all of what we're saying, but you know, take, for example, the building permit for the structure. I understand there was some debate or the concern that he had increased the seating capacity. And how often do we hear a new level or a balcony or something collapse because it was not built, the specs were not properly built, or they didn't conform or didn't get it approved? And that's the whole purpose of having building permits. It's not just to make a few dollars. But it's to prevent.
The thing I hear from my constituents are that, why was this allowed to happen in the first place? How did it get this far?
Mm-hmm.
And the answer is that the process takes so long that he was able to do it because he got the cease and desist, or he got a a cease and desist order, not back in November. But it took the government, the DPP, and the health department, you know, 3 to 4 months before they could get to that point. You know, so there's a process. In the interim, he's building away, he's opening, he's operating, and, you know, just through the process, he was able to put that under the radar. Now it's built. Now it's there. Now it's happening. It's tangible. How do you stop it? How do you get rid of it now? You cannot.
Well, you can. You, if you don't come into compliance, it's real simple. Because you fail to comply with the law, and then the government is supposed to throw its hand up and say, okay, to hell with it, go ahead and do it. Because you didn't do it in conformity with the laws. I don't think so.
Well, that seems to be the consensus, is that, hey, if you get it all together and you get all your ducks in a row, you get your fire code permit, you get your building permit, you get your sewage fixed, then everything's fine and you can continue to operate and we'll give you all your permits.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't seem fair to me. It doesn't seem right to me that he goes ahead and does it and then they issue it later and there's no repercussions. Okay,
Bob, explain to Carol about the Liquor Commission, too.
Well, we went down to the Liquor Commission, and one of the things that was really alarming, you want to talk about corruption, was the chair of the Liquor Commission didn't know we were there. And when Andy Anderson came up to the table, he said, I'd like to think I'm not biased, but we've been politically active together, so maybe I am. And I'm like, kind of like, wow, just taken back. Like, did that just come out of his mouth?
Who is the chairman of the...
I don't recall his name. But anyway, so we got up and we testified, and we said, you know, he doesn't have his building permits. He doesn't have his fire permit. He's not compliant with his septic system. And they were quite rude to us. And they said, what does that have to do then with him selling liquor? And we're like, everything. Because if he's not complying to those laws, what makes us think he's going to comply to your liquor laws? And also, if the business should not be open in the first place, what the heck are you doing issuing him a liquor license to sell booze? So, and they were quite rude. And they, you know, they said that has nothing, those 3 points that we brought up has nothing to do with them selling booze. And we go, well, it has everything to do with it. So
mm-hmm.
they take a recess and they go in the back and they talk about it and decide what they're going to do. So they said, based on not having the license, not having the fire code license, and the septic system not being upgraded, we're not going to issue them a permanent permit. We're going to suspend this case until, I think it was August, so you can get all your ducks in a row and get all these things fixed, and then we'll issue you a permit. So I was quite taken back that they were verbally abusive to us and rude to us, saying that had no relevance to the case.
Mm-hmm.
Yet they ruled on the case and on the 3 decisions that we brought up.
So I was
quite miffed at that.
Probably they deemed it moot decision because if he weren't an open, he couldn't sell it, and that was a way of them getting from the noose from around their neck. Is it Don Picaro that was the chairman?
I don't recall.
I can't recall the name either.
But
Carol, this goes on farther from the Liquor Commission. It also goes down to wanting to get rid of our neighborhood boards. And Bob can expound on that, too. They're trying their best to get rid of us, the neighborhood boards that help make decisions for this island.
Well, let me stop both of you there and say this to you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. You guys are confirming what has been aching me in the belly for so long. I've been sitting here preaching that, and the neighborhood board's intent is good, but they're just as lend themselves to corruption, and I'll explain it and lay it out to you. I believe communities should have representation and have such a structure, but there should be some revisiting of the way the structure is, because there are many of the people work for the mayor's office and city offices that are on the neighborhood boards or have a little bit much control. Am I correct?
That may be correct.
No.
Really,
stop.
Really
hold on, Bob.
That.
Bob, if we're going to sit here and do a little surgery, not maybe. It's either in part contributing.
Love you.
Go ahead.
Yes, let me rephrase that then. Yeah, in part, But on the most part, you know, like, for, I know for our example out here on the North Shore, I don't see any of that. You know, there may be, have someone, people with their personal opinions. But me, as a representative, I go out in my neighborhood, I talk to people, my phone, I give people my phone number, I'm always available for questions, and I take the, I get the ideals and what the, what everybody, what do my constituents want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I was really surprised to hear that they're trying to eliminate the boards because we're making a difference. It's how our community voice can be heard. It's a place where we can get together, discuss the issues, and come up with a resolution so that we can bring it to the next level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what's happening is people are getting active. You know, sometimes it's quite deflating because, you know, we do something, we make recommendations, and then, you know, greed and corruption, they just do whatever they want. But then we have our, some small victories, and we make a difference. And you think, wow, this is worth it, because we're all volunteers. We don't get, we're elected volunteers. We don't get paid.
Mm-hmm.
We donate a lot of our time, a lot of our resources. And what's happening is we're starting to ruffle some feathers. We're making a difference. People are listening. And I, you know, I get people on the road. They come up to me, you know, I'll see them in the town, and they go, hey, Bob, thanks. And I'm like, for what? And they go, I heard you on, you know, I saw you on TV the other day on the board. They go, thank you for standing up for us. Thank you for doing this. You know, and they, and what's happening is, like I said, is we're ruffling some feathers.
Mm-hmm.
People don't like it. They don't like being held accountable.
Let me lay out
for what they're doing.
If I can, and I, I'm in agreement with you, we need to have public representation community, and as it's set up now, it's fine. But the influence, start with selecting the commission, the head, the mayor, who he appoints them.
We elect them.
The chairman of the commission.
I can't answer that.
The neighborhood board commission. Who?
Oh, the neighbor. I don't know, but I know our individual neighborhood board.
Well, you know, that's what I'm going to offer that too as a, as in support of what I'm saying. If I'm not mistaken, the chief is appointed. Why not have him elected as well, him or her elected?
Absolutely.
Right, number one. And then let's go over to Y and I, my favorite place. Those are my peeps, and I love them dearly. But
right.
If you can talk about your own, and you're getting closer to fixing and resolving things. Over the years, when Mufi Hanneman was in, you had the community development project or a community payback benefits package where to leave the landfill there as a compensation. So what happened? You had people getting on the neighborhood board that worked for the city, and then in turn there were grants, some upwards of 300, some thousand, almost $1 million, and that money, a great portion of it went to the neighborhood board members.
Well, I think you're going to find that anywhere. You're going to find corruption and greed anywhere you go.
Well, I understand, but we're...
But one of the things is that I like about this forum is our chair is elected by us, by the members of that neighborhood board. And that when we see, when Jack and I see something that's not right, we'll call them to task.
Mm-hmm.
And we will hold them accountable.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the advantage of having multiple people on the board.
Oh, I agree.
That if someone is doing something that's wrong, we're not going to sweep it under the rug. We're not going to look the other way. We're going to hold them to task, and we're going to you know, make what's wrong right.
Here's what I'm trying to convey. That,
hey, Carol, yeah. I'm going to have to leave. You and Bob continue the conversation. Thank you very much, Carol.
Off to see the wizard, okay?
See you, Jack.
So Bob, what happens then is that we have this system that it's not all bad, it's not all good, but these are elements that, imagine $1 million being diverted from a community that was the intent of going into the community and end up in the hands of individuals on the neighborhood boards that, so that they could use it for themselves and their families. We can't, even if it's happening in the remote part of the desert, it's still wrong. It's the system that unless you change the system and address those issues, it will find its way festering and infecting your community potentially. I mean, you're mindful and watchful, and the people in now, but as long as it's available to be abused and there's that element. So I think there should be a revisit of the neighborhood board practice, not to get away with it or do away with it completely. You there? Hello? Lost you, Bob. Anyway, the reality is no perfect solution, but what portion of a process is wrong that, and you, how do you measure the importance? What can we tolerate in the neighborhood board? The neighborhood board program is a process with good intentions, but and as Bob Justice was saying, that it's there with they don't do that, and their community is on top of things. But there are many communities that are not on top of things. And there are many communities that lend themselves to the politics of the reigning mayor or the reigning city council. And I'm not saying that they should go into these meetings and with speaking and spewing venom. But on the other hand, I can give you specific examples and where the Ethics Commission, as a result of reviewing the investigations that I did, and why would I as a citizen have to investigate that when, in fact, it was a neighborhood board member or several? Why isn't the system able to investigate people of that behavior? Caller, go ahead with your comments.
Well, they should be. There should be some regulatory committee, and I believe that there is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to probably be redundant here. But I can only speak for our neighborhood board because that's the only one that I really know. And I really feel that if there is that kind of corruption, if there is that kind of thing, and we know about it, we have our community's best interest at heart, that we will hold them accountable, that we will take care of that.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's been some issues where there was people that voted on specific issues on our neighborhood board that we had them recant their statement, and we had them recuse themselves from voting on that because they had a vested interest in that.
Right.
And that's just kind of on a smaller level. But I mean, that's how micromanaging we are with that. You know, I really feel that ours is self-governing and that there is a larger board that oversees us. You know, for like the Sunshine Law and things like that, that holds us accountable. But I think the self-governing here, because we do love our community and we do have the best interest at heart, that when we see any kind of corruption, we're going after them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
Right. But again, I'm not disagreeing with you at all. I understand that. But I am suggesting and strongly suggesting that while the neighborhood board in your community may be up to snuff.
Right.
There's more than one. There's 12 of them or something. I don't know the exact number. I kind of stay away from them now because you go to some of them and they might get to fight and you might end up having to have a referee or the police come, you know what I mean? So, you know, and these are realities. And public participation in government, it's a great, great forum. Absolutely. But then in some of them you get the people that come in and the big brothers or the loud shouters shout you down. You go to Ever Beach. I mean, they've had police issues and people filing complaints against one another, almost criminal complaints. You know, and what happens? So a revisiting of the way the structure is all that I'm advocating. I'm not saying do away with
them. Yeah, I could understand that. I could understand that. I think that, like you said, I think people need to, if they have a vested interest or like they work for, you know, someone that, you know, for the state or something, where they could have a major influence. Yeah, I don't think they should be serving in a lower capacity.
And I'm offering this because to make it good, you should look at all the weaknesses and the frailties and to make it strong. And so, for example, there were instances where one key person in the neighborhood board commission's office and what have you was actually running and burning political copies and flyers for the mayor with campaign. See, and so when you file a complaint against these people, then the commissioner gets to hear it. Well, guess what happens to that? round file. So, so I think it's beneficial to either acknowledge that, you know, fight like hell to keep the neighborhood boards in, but also struggle like the devil to make sure that we tighten it up even more. The Sunshine Act, when you know, there's some strict rules in of the state. You can't have something on the agenda unless it's published so many days or notified, right? What is it, 6 days, depending on the subject?
I believe so.
Not the subject or whatever. How I stay away from Robert's Rules of Law. You can see I don't sit in meetings. But hold on here, Bob.
Sure.
Caller, thank you. Go ahead with your comments.
Thank you for taking my call. In terms of the neighborhood boards, where were the neighborhood boards when Rail Hart got to the point where it is today? Where were the neighborhood boards? Your support for reforming, revising the structure, for me, the talk is over. We need overt, aggressive agitation to try to change the structure on behalf of the common good of the people.
Okay.
Well, what happens is when I am definitely not an advocate of the rail, and none of I don't nobody I know is.
Nobody I knew in North Shore is.
and because we'll never use it, you know, and it's just a waste of money. And you know, we can fight against things, and we can make our recommendations. But like I said earlier, greed and corruption overrides that. You know, we can do all we want, but we only have so big a teeth. Mm-hmm. We only have so much influence. You know, like the beach house, we tried to stop it from the beginning, but it took the DPP and other people 3 to 4 to 5 months before they could get all their ducks in a row before they could make some action. So we try like hell to do the right thing. We try to make a difference. But just because we say this is what we want doesn't mean it's going to happen. In fact, many instances it doesn't happen. We're just the voice of the community. We're letting our voice be heard, and what they do with that is on them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we try. We try.
My comments are not ad hominem. It is not to resort to any kind of argumentation at all. But I and many people that I know can't accept greed and corruption.
Oh, me either. I cannot in the least way, and it's super frustrating.
But we have to do something, and it's an obsession with me. I've been at the city council, the Charter Commission, many different times on overt testimony on behalf of the people. I'm presumptive enough to think I've talked to so many people that I can say we. And we cannot accept the greed and the corruption. And we have to do something. We can't.
And that's why we are trying to do. I know me and Mike and our board, we're down to the Liquor Commission, you know, for the beach house. We do everything we can to stop that greed and corruption. You know, I do not like it at all. You know, and I'm not laying over. I think that's why they're trying to get rid of the boards, because we are making a difference, because we are doing stuff, and people are being held to the fire, and they don't like it.
And what are they proposing? I haven't followed. What are they proposing to put in
its
place?
They're proposing to eliminate the boards completely,
mm-hmm.
and to, if you want to communicate as a community or communicate as an individual, you need to email them or call them on the phone or write them a letter.
Ah.
What you're talking about is the Charter Commission. They are the ones who meet once every 10 years. Right now, about which you speak, they are involved in making the rules, the laws, the legislation to put before the public. And I'm trying to find the next time they meet, which is very, very
Thursday.
Soon.
Well,
Thursday is the hearing for the board.
Let's be careful and not suggest that it's the commission that sits, the Charter Commission that sits around and say, well, how are we going to screw them this time? No, you have to have people inside of government actively advocating for that. People like the mayor, the city council, and things. They don't just pull it out of the air or you know where else.
Well, We don't necessarily know who made this complaint, who put this on the agenda, because it can be done, it could be from the top, or it could be a citizen in a community.
Right.
And it can be anonymous.
Right.
They don't have to tell who they are. It just, someone got it put on the agenda. We don't know who it is. We've tried to research it. We have no idea.
And when is the hearing? Is it going to be before
it's
a hearing?
Thursday.
To
it's
do
Thursday,
away with it, huh?
I'm trying to find...
It's June the 9th, and the time has been changed from regularly 3:30 to 2 o'clock. So 2 o'clock on June 9th at the Charter Commission. I assume it's the second floor of Honolulu.
Mm-hmm. And
thank you.
I'm absolutely sure that Neighborhood Board is on the agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Could I caution one thing? People who go to a charter commission meeting and are there to testify, be sure that you sign up before, the day before, or the morning of. Secondly, sometimes there could be four or five different items on the agenda, and you are not allowed to speak until the end of all five. Now, that could have been changed. Charlotte Soon has been very good. She, I think, has made a difference on the Charter Commission.
Mm-hmm.
But for me personally, because I take the hand in there, I had to interject between two issues the last time I was before the Charter Board, and it was about HART, and it was about the hand event. And the original chairman of the Charter Board was Suki. Now, not the Suki from the other island.
Yeah, no problem. They're both useless, so it doesn't matter.
And anyway, what I wanted to say very quickly is this. He is for the rail, and when I spoke before the Charter Commission, I didn't realize that until later. So in terms of the Charter Commission, you have to, as you have done, sir, your guest, Carol, investigate who these people are. Because
yeah.
They have infiltrated every aspect of our entire community, of our culture, and whether it's neighborhood board, city council, legislature,
mm-hmm.
whatever, they've infiltrated every aspect, and they are in power.
So the
I agree. I totally agree.
So, Bob, what is the effort on the part of your neighborhood board? Have they collectively filed a complaint or objection, or they, as a body, state formally that...
No, as a body, what we've suggested is that... I was trying to look it up, but I'm on my phone right now.
No problem.
Is that... Oh, maybe I can do it on my computer. Is that everybody that we know, call there. Make your voice be heard, and show up, testify.
How does the mayor stand on this? Anybody query the mayor's office as to get a formal statement? And how do the city council members? Anybody query them about it? All those that are involved, who that potentially could have an influence?
Well, I've called the mayor's office, but to no response, and. I am speaking to my senator and trying to find out what the stand is on with him, and that's something that we're working on.
Your senator, he's just giving you an opinion, I guess, because he has no say over the actual neighborhood board.
Right.
That's a city matter.
Right.
But what about your neighborhood board? How about Ernie Martin? What is he?
He's in support of the boards, but I don't know per se. I can't answer that question.
Yeah.
Because other people are working on this also, and I know some have spoke with him, but haven't been in communication with
him. It would be a tragedy if something such as the neighborhood board is in place and they just strip it completely. That I would think they would be willing to enhance it by making it stricter, even entertaining the idea of term limits. We were talking term limits on other entities in government, because it is. I have seen neighborhood boards go awry, go dead.
Well, that's a great point, because I think term limits would be a great idea because mm-hmm. there's people on our board that have been there forever, and that's one of the reasons that I got involved was because I would see these votes, and it would be like 10 to 2, and it'd be the same two people all the time, and I felt empathy for them because they were our voice, but the other people may have had a vested interest in it or some other, you know, concern. And so now Jack and I got involved, and several other people have got involved, and now it's about 5 to 7, you know, so we're starting to get a democratic board.
See,
we can have all opinions, you know. Blake McElhaney's a great friend of mine.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't always agree on stuff. We've went round and round, man. We've like not talked to each other for months, but I was just speaking with him the other day, and it's wonderful because the ones that we do agree on is awesome. We can team up, we can do it, but we don't all want to agree on everything, because that way there's different opinions and we can come up with different resolutions that may be better than the one that we thought of in the first place. We need a variety of opinion. We need everybody represented.
You know,
that's the beauty of the neighborhood board.
I love it when advocates are in a disagreement with one another. It forces upon you. You either take your action and you're going to end up successful or doing something dumb. And it forces everybody to go back and, okay, you're going to argue this point. Well, good, but then you better come in support of it and explain, and then you'll win those people over. I love advocacy work when it works that way, you know, disagree, right? Because we don't have at our disposal the mayor. He can pick up the phone and ask the corporation council, how dumb will I look if I do this and put the screw to the people? You and I out there, we're operating from the seat of our pants. So I always welcome a disagreement, honestly. Objection. I don't like to hear, well, you know, I should have said something. No.
Well, I've heard someone put it to me the other way. They go, a successful meeting is if everyone walks away a little unhappy, because that means everybody compromised.
Oh.
Could I make a suggestion? Maybe this already occurs. I do not know, but... can all the heads of all the neighborhood singular individual boards come together before the leadership, that one person who is responsible for all the boards, and come up with some kind of consensus action for any injustice to anybody?
Well, I don't know. Maybe, Bob, I can send a letter or email to each neighborhood board chairman and ask them where do they stand. Do they support as a board? Is that possible?
It's any issue. Obviously, I'm obsessed with rail. But the whole process of having an individual member who is chairman of an individual board, all of them come together and then approach the leadership in terms of their concerns.
That sounds like a great idea. And let me tell you, I am not happy about the rail either. You know, I have a very good friend that has a motorcycle shop, and his shop is right where the rail is being constructed, and his income went down 60%, and his landlord was not willing to compromise on the rent during this time, and he's shutting his shop down after 15 years.
Yeah.
That's my close friend, and I'm like super bummed out about it, you know. So, I mean, there's just so much that's happening with it that
mm-hmm.
is just so wrong. You know, I just think it's, to me, to tell you the truth, I think the only reason this is my personal opinion, this doesn't come from the board, this doesn't come from anything, is that our unions were struggling. I come from a place where the unions are gone, and our unions were struggling. And by doing the rail, it ensured them another 25 years of unions. And I think it goes all the way to the top. I think it's all about the money. It's all about extorting money from our federal government, from different people, so that they can continue with their corruption and their practices and lining their own pockets. I think it's just a ploy to get money.
In the old days, you mentioned union, and it was a good thing. Today, you don't know. You look at their salaries, and you look at the... I mean, you want to know the state of affairs with the unions? They don't even have a healthy representation, even in the basic grievance process. I get more calls from workers from various unions, represented by unions, that complain they can't even get a phone call back from their union leaders or representative. Kind of scary, isn't it? But
it
you
is.
But you better not delay pay on your monthly or membership.
this might be redundant, and I don't want to be repetitious, but I was there when at the city council a proposal was made. You do not have a fiscal plan that shows that you can continue the project. You've only put two or three columns up. This was posed to the whole HART board. How are you going to pay for the project? Are you going to put the columns up and then tear them down? Horner's jumped up and said, what do you want to do? Send the boys back to the bench. That's what it's all about.
Okay. Well, anyway.
You're awesome. I love this caller.
Well, the thing is that neighborhood boards, and lest we forget that they are just advisory anyway. That's the way the city council and the city, the mayors and other leadership, when it's necessary to dismiss the neighborhood board, well, your opinion isn't binding. It's just advisory. So,
right, and that's that's some of the frustration. It's like we work really hard on a project or something, and then they just override us,
right?
You know,
because of
money.
But
no,
here's why I say that we should just revise it, but not do away with it. And that is, in the neighborhood board process, citizens volunteering, not conflicted, interested in the community as a whole, and they only give us an advisory role. But then a developer can get appointed to a commission that oversees his matters in development, and he gets to vote and have a say.
Right. You know, Carol, what was really encouraging to me is the last couple of meetings, this has been an issue. You know, people know that they're trying to eliminate the neighborhood boards. And we have a really good, we're so blessed here on the North Shore. We have a really good turnout. We have a really great community, you know, that shows up to the board meetings and voices their opinions. And, you know, I thought, well, it'd be nice. There should be more, man. This place should be just standing room only. And then I hear some of the boards only have, you know, 3, 4, 5 people.
Yeah.
So,
some.
And with that, I feel very blessed. Mm-hmm. But every one of them, even the ones that are kind of like naysayers or kind of a little grumpy or the nice people, everyone got up after their testimony or what their issue that they were discussing and said, thank you to the neighborhood board. We're in complete support of what you're doing because it allows us to be here.
Mm-hmm.
It allows our voice to be heard.
Yeah.
I mean, I haven't heard anybody that agrees with this. But I agree with you, Carol, that, you know, there is some things that need to be...
Yeah, and I mean, fix it. Don't get rid of it. But anyway, I got no time on this hour. I'll be back in about 5 minutes. If you want to call back and things you didn't say or wanted to say, call back, Bob. And there's a caller waiting. Call back in the next hour, 524-1080. Thank you guys for calling.
Hello. All right. Thank you so much, Bill.
Bye.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108.
Some people think we don't have the right to say it's my country. Before they give in,
they'd rather fuss and fight
than say it's my country. I paid 300 years or more of slave driving sweat and welts on my back. This is my country. Do-do-do.
me up die and protecting my pride for me to go second class. We've survived a hard blow, and I want you to know that you'll face us at last. And I know you will give consideration. Shall we perish unjust or live equal as a nation? This is my country. Ooh-hoo-hoo. Ooh-hoo-hoo. And I know you will give consideration. Shall we perish unjust or live equal as a nation? This is my country. Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning and welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, the second half, right here at KWAI 1080 AM. You can go to the website at KWAI1080AM.com and listen to all of us, every show that's aired here on radio, KWAI1080AM.com, and just click on Listen Live, whether it's 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, or 2 in the evening, or whatever. Just join in. I know you want to hear what's happening around town and in other places, so join in. And then if you can't remember all that, just go to carolcox.com. Click on Live, and you can hear it. And if you want to, you can just click, while you're there, carolcox.com, click on Listen to Podcasts, and put you to sleep or bore the heck out of you. One of the two, but or infuriate you, whatever. But do join in, and we have some pretty good shows here on the station, so if I might add, and so we'll just invite you there. But some of you, if you're like me, you know you occasionally wash your car and clean your car. So I want to let you know about a business called Perfect Auto Shine. And it's auto detailing. It's owners run, Ilick, auto dealing. Over there at 98-1247 Ka'ahumanu Street, 366-8360. Trust me, if he does you a bad job, you let me know. And this isn't a paid commercial. It's just he's a hardworking man and got a crew that's unbelievable, folks. Security and everything else. And if you left a dollar and dime on the car seat, you'll come back and maybe find a dollar and 50 cents. You know, that's how honest he is. So if I was you, I would go look him up there by Malu, Perfect Auto Shine. 366-8360. Tell him, don't tell him I sent you. Just get excited when you see your wax job and how clean your car is. Alrighty, I got a caller here and we'll take up from where we left or get going where we're going. Caller, thank you for calling.
Hey, Carol. I've been listening to you and everything I can't understand the thing that you're talking about. It's just like Chinese. Nevertheless, I am ready to take you on.
Wait, you want me to do it in Chinese, or if there's such a language, or Mandarin, or Cantonese, or what would you like me to talk to you in?
No, I'm half kidding. Yeah. do you remember Andy, when you were talking to me 6 months ago?
Andy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I like to talk to you off the air. I tried to get you last week, and I called at 11 o'clock. But
okay, call 782-6627.
782-6627?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All righty.
Okay.
Aloha, bro. So, guys, I told you about the neighborhood board in a bit, so if you got a comment on that, please feel free to call in and on that. But I want to share with you on Red Hill now. There's been some decisions being made, and you're not part of them. There's all kinds of things. And the state health department, and I must tell you, I'm not going to be so kind, because when you're putting contaminants in the water, and you have been for many years, and you start to cover it up, I mean, if it's as an innocent act, if it's we're worried about the secret of the national security, hell, you can pick up any paper and read about the tanks under the ground, and we've that's been disclosed before we even knew that there were leaks. So that's, and they give tours there, you know. State Representative McDermott and his group, the Navy, whatever it is, I don't know what the Navy, some retired group or some collection, Navy support team or whatever, they give tours, and other people get tours, and you just go on the internet and you can read anything about it. So there's this conspiracy between the State Health Department, between the Navy and the EPA. Because anything that they find and know should be right out there in a timely fashion so we can make our own decisions or just be informed. And this thing about transparency on the part of David Ige, I'm going to tell you something, folks. At times it's good, and at other times it's worse than you could ever get. I'm waiting for documents from the Agriculture Department, and you would think I was in some backwoods state in Mississippi. And like I say, it's really, really crazy that they would have, they're having meetings now, convening meetings at the State Health Department with State Health Department personnel and the Navy and the EPA, and they make decisions. And you go on the State Health Department's website, you won't see any minutes, anything, any agenda, nothing. So I'm here to tell you that you are getting the brunt of one of the biggest lies, and they're trying to fashion things up. And I've told you this already, so don't be shocked and don't think. Let me get rid of this real quick here.
You're back.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now, here's Carol.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. That was a good mistake there. A little precious, baby. Anyway, I was caught in mid-thread here and had the iPad on, and for some reason I was listening to Lou Rawls early and didn't shut him off. But anyway, you got to see things go to hell in the handbasket, possibly. But anyway, back to Red Hill. So this, follow this now. I shared with you about a year ago, about 2014, 2015, and I laid specifically from their documents that the Navy had submitted to the State Health Department, that the Health Department claimed that they hadn't been had a chance to review those records, but those were records that they demanded of the Navy to submit on a quarterly basis, telling sampling results. I don't know if that makes sense, but it don't make sense anyway. And when they're BSing the public, it doesn't make sense, and don't try to make sense of it. But what I can tell you is that they have taken this out of the basic airwaves and the papers and having private meetings. And I want to share with you something so that none of you go to sleep on this thing, because there's some serious implications here. And I'm going to try to explain it so you don't get, I don't frustrate you and confuse you. The Navy has been regularly testing the groundwater at the Red Hill facility since 2005. There are no federal or state standards set for contaminants in groundwater. Rather, the state of Hawaii has established environmental action levels and in some cases site-specific risk-based levels for certain monitoring. So, if there are no federal standards or state standards for testing, why are you bothering testing? You can kill people with one billionth of a milliliter or one billionth or 10 pounds or 10 gallons. Whatever it is, there's no standards to say what's safe. So you then say that, well, the state has set environmental action levels. In case it's at a certain level, they will say take some action. So follow this now. Early on, they were saying, oh, we don't have anything in the water, and we're not testing, we're not finding it in the monitoring wells over here, and it's not in the water system at Pearl Harbor. But the reality is, it does not matter if it is, but they are finding it, but there's no standards. There's no levels. There's no safe levels. There's no EPA safe levels. And the state comes along and says, well, we'll do environmental action levels. So if it's a 10,000 parts per million, we will, say, post some signs. Or we'll pump some air in it or require that it go across into a pump or mix some other chemicals. That's one. Or we'll look at it in its site-specific. So if, basically, to be facetious, if there was a pipe faucet going to the little children's center, they would be concerned because these are children and the chemicals there at any level might be threatening or harmful to them. But us rusty buckets, no, don't matter. That's a site-specific risk base. So imagine now why this big charade of private meetings, secret meetings, if they are unwilling and there are no standards. Strange. So what are they really discovering in their sampling regime now? What levels? They're quiet about it. There's no need to be secret. We all should agree that, yes, they are leaking. The tanks are. There's contaminants in the water. We have to do something about it. We're monitoring. But no, they go and convene private meetings. And I think we owe that to David Ige, because he's the guy that appoint these dudes. And he's the guy, and also Mike Gabbert and Chris Lee, who initially came out and made these great representations and presentations and all, and sheltering and shielding the Navy. Encouraging the behind the scenes, behind the doors negotiations, and the Navy got the state by the nose and just, come on, little puppy, come on, come on, sit over here. No, 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 don't go to the bathroom over there in that corner. Don't, no, no, you follow us. When it should be the other way around, because the state health department is a regulatory body. The EPA, though, if you go on their website, epa.gov, and just Google or search Region 9, Red Hill, and you'll come up with this document. The last updated document that they have on the EPA has is 2016. So they also have a document that was done May of this year that has the chemicals in it and talks about it and gives a history. The report to the 29th Legislature, State of Hawaii, 2016, pursuant to the City Concurrent Resolution 57, requesting the Department of Health continue to the task force to study the effects of the January 2014 spill. But they got us locked in on the 2014, but there's been spillage for years, contamination for years introduced from this operation. And so it's so shameful. And I've asked, for example, you would think that on the state website there would be something, right? They're having their private meetings. You would think, well, we owe the public something. We just can't screw them that bad. We can't be that disrespectful. Transparency in IGE, IT, it ain't transparent. So I'm just to tell you, the Appendix B also identifies, and this is this document, tanks out of use, tanks are implant. So they grouped all this together. Red Hill Buck Fuel Storage Facility, two tanks, tank 1 and tank 19 were emptied in 1987 and 1986, respectively. There are currently no future plans for these tanks. Kuahuna Peninsula Facility, former diesel purification plant, the 94,000-gallon concrete tanks have been emptied for 25 years. Active remediation began in 1996 for a few release and discontinued in 2006. Long-term management. So I'm reading this to you to show you. We started off with Red Hill. So the Navy says, well, maybe we should go and include them all the sites. And so that means, in quantifying that, that means the Red Hill, the greatest threat to our drinking water aquifer, is goes put on the back burner because we got to include all of them. And guess who's going along with this? David Ige and our state senator, Gabbard, and Chris Lee, and the others that voted for the resolution to pass it. So the Red Hill Buck Fuel Storage Facility releases from the Red Hill facility, including the January, including now, you see. They're really coming clean now, including the 2014. Wow, that's funny. It was about 27,000 gallons initially, but they couldn't tell, and they were back and forth, and maybe it was a false reading, or the people didn't understand. And now, so they're in this document, later they come clean with it, including the 2014 leak. Are overseen by Solid Hazardous Waste Branch, UST program. How many people in the Solid Waste Hazardous program that's overseeing that? Think about 100? How many would you guess? I know of one and maybe two. Okay? So on September 28, 2015, the AOCSOW, Enforceable Agreement to Address Cleanup and Prevent Future Releases at the site, details below. The three other FCT's facilities with release associated with them in the past are various stages of remediation. Additional information on these facilities can be obtained. It's good information, but tell us what you're finding in the water. Tell us the levels. And they went to UH and had them to do a sampling or model, and they indicate, oh, it won't impact the water at the Board of Water Supply well. It doesn't matter if you're impacting drinking water, any unforeseen situation may develop, requiring us to use that water and may have to tap in directly. We could have a major quake, a major earthquake, causing a fracture in the dike below subsurface and cause that water to drift in a whole different direction. We don't know. That's the whole makeup in the activities of geology. What's good today, you know, when we have a shaker, we may have water flowing in one direction really good, and then all of a sudden one piece of rock fractures and slips down and it's impervious and it creates a dam and that water goes somewhere else. So why are we allowing the Navy to play so loosely? And that reminds me, just in this general area, I've uncovered 5 million gallons of diesel fuel that on the ground there, with along with other 13 other plumes. We have the TCEs, trichloroethylene, from the Navy cleaning laundry, and we have many others. So that's on the ground. Let's go over to Radford High School and see what's on the ground, above ground. Contaminants, asbestos, dioxins, furans, you name it. And let's go just right across the sidewalk to the small school there, Makalapa Elementary School, where the grounds are contaminated with glass and broken glass and underneath is, and there are some exposed contaminants that they found. And still yet, as I brought them to you a year ago, they're still there. So there's a conspiracy of sort. And that brings me to another unkind opinion or comment I like to share with many of you, and this is directed at many of you military people. Why is it that, and I'm a military person, former, I had 3 years service and will serve again if I have to, but we seem now to be focusing on those that have served, and we should respect them, and we, you know, if we're pulling up at the same spot, and I should be so kind and back up and let you park because you served in the Army and you're active duty. Well, let's see if we can see that same generosity and caring and loving and sharing and appreciation for the people that live here. Why do you think that you can pollute and then manipulate us behind laws and regulation, as I've demonstrated to you the GAO report where they refused to identify certain sites at Pearl Harbor because it was not politically good for them? So I just want to pull your coattails. This should be a two-way street, folks. And don't tell me we have to pollute you because we're in the mode of protecting our country's interests. I don't buy that. So if you think for those military, the captains and up and high and all those people that have been the decision making, and then find yourself gravitating to a closed door meeting behind the scenes with sleazy talk about hiding things and then give us a report. Yeah, I know you probably say the EPA allows it and the state tolerates it. Doesn't matter. It's still wrong. You should own up to these contaminants and these issues and be aggressive in cleaning them up, because you, in the meantime, while you're hiding and protecting your own image and interests, you're killing people, you're sickening them, and you're making the environment toxic. But yet, you don't have any objections to us buying your drink in the bar and says, thank you for your service. Your service extends here too, not abroad. Don't abuse it. And I say that if you don't like it, then tough. You're hearing it from the right guy. Enough already. When this much pollutants, willy-nilly, just flying around, laying around, and your approach is, let's delay some more. But while you're at it, thank you for recognizing that I'm serving my country. Can't go that way, folks. That's not American. It's just as good to give as it is to receive. So think about that. And I'm so sick and tired of picking up one more document to find out that, okay, another discussion of military cleanup. Oh, well, read further. Oh, there'll be a delay. Got no money. But thank you for the drinks, and thank you for acknowledging my service. Can't go that way, folks. Maybe that's a disease. I think the American way is that we care from this side of the aisle to that side of the aisle. I compliment you. I respect you. You respect me. You compliment me. You compliment us by when you knowingly and inform that there are contaminants on our school grounds. There should not be a debate or discussion or triggering of some technical scheme that you can engage in with the EPA and the State Health Department. It's just wrong. You can run and hide. You may be successful to do this on and on. But I'm just telling you, military people, this is the image, and this is so when you see some people frowning at you, just be reminded. They, too, know that they love and appreciate what you do for us as a nation in protecting us, but they are equally offended when we find your crap laying all over the ground on our school grounds, and when we find it in our drinking waters, and you go and engage in a hide-and-seek mentality or mindset because you want to protect some political interest. It has to stop. So this document that the EPA has put out here, you go to their website, folks, and, oh, it's impressive. But all of us don't go to college and read and study and bother ourselves with learning the technical aspects of chemicals and contaminants and environmental impacts. Why are we not notified on a timely basis to participate, and why are not these meetings open to public? What do you think, we're going to be so disruptive that you can't hear yourself think? So this is the WPSOW investigation remediation releases. And I've already given you this, and many of them denied it and said, well, Carol Cox, he's just, he's off the hook. But if you go to carolcox.com and just Google Red Hill and listen to the shows, and I told you long time ago when they were saying, we don't really know if 27,000 gallons really leaked. And I'm telling you, we know and they know, and here's their documents. So, but again, they finally produced them. And results of the site investigation are summarized below. The nature and extent of contamination. The investigation analyzed rock cores from three borings advanced to install the new monitoring wells drilled in volcanic bedrock where no petroleum-impacted soil or material was expected. Groundwater from the wells, and I'm going to bore you with the numbers, and the four facility wells and soil vapor from SVM wells in slant boring underneath. Rock core samples were analyzed for petroleum constituents. No constituents were detected above, now listen to this now, above reporting limits or associated action levels. You get that? They didn't say it's not in the ground. They didn't say the tanks are not impacting the environment. They just say it's there, but it's not above the level set by the health department. But then going back and reminding you that there are no standards or levels set by the EPA, no safe levels. So don't go to sleep on me here, folks, because we are being lied to. We're being held hostage, and I remind you, Camp Lejeune, if you got an email or you got a ability to Google or Internet, just Camp Lejeune in the Carolinas and type in for contamination. We've talked about that on this show as well. So the groundwater in the first round of groundwater sampling, TPHD concentrations exceeded the DOH environmental action level. EALs for drinking water at all wells except RHMW225401. No evidence of petroleum was observed. groundwater from RHM2WO2 located near Tank 5 and Tank 6 had the highest concentrations of petroleum compounds. Another well was the only well in which target volatile organic compounds, VOCs, and semi-volatile organic compounds were observed. TPHD, TPH gasoline range organics, TPHG, trichloroethylene, TCEs, naphthalene, methyl naphthalene, and methyl naphthalene concentrations reported for unfiltered groundwater samples was above the drinking water action level, but the dissolved and filtered lead concentrations reported for this well was below action levels. And I apologize for rattling through, but it's so frustrating that when all of this came to light, then there was this frenzy, and the Gabberts and the Chris Lees, and they got to get their faces on, and like they were statesmen, and it was on and on and on. And now the final results was they get to go behind closed doors, and I was told by a top official in the state, the Navy does not want us to talk to the public about this. If the Navy is a violator and contributing to the contaminants and responsible party, how does the Navy then get to dictate to the State Health Department and the EPA what gets out to the public? So, this is kind of scary, let me tell you. Andy Anderson's matters and his handling is a picnic compared on a scale and the involvement of the legislators, and they made a resolution. And mind you now, keep in mind, they so quickly psyched this resolution, but the resolutions are not binding. They signed an agreement, but again, they can back out on that. And who in the EPA going to stand up and say no to the military people? They're sister agencies. And for years, the EPA was involved in the activities up there at that site, in the oily pits and the dumping of the oil in the streams and the lava stream. They knew about it. They knew all of it. They know about it. It was not a Superfund site, but the equivalent. But they didn't tell us. You can go to carolcox.com and see some of the earlier postings that we've done about the oily pits and what have you. But, folks, it's worth sitting here sounding frustrated to say to you that this thing called transparency on the part of David Ige, I don't know if it's because he's an engineer, or I don't know if it's because he means well but just doesn't know how to tell his appointees and his friends to get busy and don't lie to the people, open it up, transparency. I don't know what the problem is. But when I've learned, and this has been going on for months now, and you see them on occasion when I visit the state office, I see the Navy and they're all in uniform and they're going in, and the EPA and, you know, the public, you have two public people. I guess they're there at this point. Maybe not. Maybe they've excluded all the people. But they're not posting in a timely fashion minutes of the meeting. They're making decisions. And they're not involving the public. Soil vapor samples were collected to evaluate this document. It says, evaluate the health risks associated with intrusion of soil vapor into the Red Hill tunnels, and evaluate SVM wells as potential leak detection devices. Samples were collected in sumo canisters and slant borings beneath. And VOCs, the risk of industrial workers was found to be insignificant. So they're, and this document now was May 4th, 2016. That's when this document was produced. And again, it's the Red Hill Administrative Order on Consent, Attachment of Scope of Work and Deliverable. I'm here to tell you that there is some serious hiding and go seek on the part of the military and the part of the state health department. And I don't know how to explain to you or even say to you why. What's the rationale? We know it's there. We know the tanks are there. We know the Chinese know they're there and the Russians, so it's not a concern for this national security. And we know they're leaking. We can read the papers. We know that. You're reluctant to tell us. So what's the big secret? Carla, thank you for calling. Go ahead with your comment.
Yeah, aloha. I'd like to say, first of all, that the EPA has for years and years and years had a long-standing policy that allows the military to decide what information to make public.
Mm-hmm.
And so so the EPA Superfund laws, they don't have any teeth anyway, and, you know, and they already had several places here on this island on the Superfund, especially Pearl Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've got some, from years back, of the even if 55-gallon drums of all kinds of waste, including nuclear waste, but they dumped, like, I don't know, 50, 60 miles just off our shores.
Yeah.
And you know how all that stuff moves around. And then I found a thing, this goes way back to mid-1980s, of some leaks, oil leaks, coming from central Oahu, from Waikakalua, Kupapa storage facilities.
Mm-hmm.
In 1954, 300,000 gallons of aviation fuel leaked. 1954 again, 200,000 gallons of aviation fuel leaked. 1978, 50,000 of jet fuel soaked into the ground. Going back to 1954, 20,000 gallons of aviation fuel leaked
mm-hmm.
out of a pipe located under the Kipapa stream bed. So, you know, that stuff reaches the water table.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, but, and of course, what happens is the big officers, they retire, and then they get into the positions where they make decisions about the schools and the EPA and, you know, the Chamber of Commerce. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, the Navy League is something else. A good study on the Navy League would be a
good... There you go. That's an organization
McDermott
is the Navy League.
Trades and thank you for your service kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
That, I mean, they're behind the, you know, the... I guess I can't say military-industrial complex, but, you know, related to that kind of thing where they get the power, so they infiltrate everything on this island.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but that's all I have to say for now.
Well, thank you.
Okay, bye.
Aloha. So, in the same vein, here's a document, historical release of properties neighboring the Red Hill Station. I think it's only fair because, again, I don't want to malign the military to the point where they're solely responsible. As I've said on this show many times, many of our major environmental issues and violations and egregious behavior is presented and a gift of not only the state health department people and the city and county of Honolulu and other federal agencies. But, for example, Halawa Correctional Facility, a Fossil Village resident reported oil contamination and dead fish in the Halawa Stream in May 1988. An underground storage tank located at the south end of the Halawa Correctional Facility medical unit was discovered to be leaking into the Halawa Stream. Approximately 2,000 gallons of diesel fuel were recovered by oil-water separation in the South Halawa Stream, the North Tributary Stream, and the underground pipeline. In 1988, the UST and pipes had been leaking for an unknown period. Wow. Two oil water separators were installed and collected approximately 500 gallons. Yeah, but if you leak a million, what's 500 gallons? So, 23 soil borings. Anyway, in August, monitoring of the site was discontinued based on the results of the test. So, Red Hill Malcolm neighborhood. A release was reported April 15, 2008, in Red Hill, Malka neighborhood of the Aliamano Military Reservation, immediately north of the intersection of Tampa Drive and Ford Avenue. Approximately 1 to 2 gallons of unknown product were released during excavation of a 500-gallon underground storage tank. So these records reflect where these contaminants were. Halawa Correctional Facility, again. had contaminations underground storage tank, April 1989, occurred. Two gasoline USTs and a smaller diesel were located in the parking area adjacent to the prison wall and western portion of the facility. So a substantial amount were dumped there, spilled. Halaba Correction Facility, again, security prison. A diesel and gasoline UST were excavated at the Halaba Correctional Facility, high security prison. The tanks were located approximately 30 feet from the eastern wall, and it's leaked substantially. City and County of Honolulu, Halaba Bus Facility, and it had leaks in underground storage tanks. So they've cleaned up a number of the underground storage tanks. Hawaiian Cement Concrete Aggregates had a leak, and TPHD or organic lead benzene were found in concentrations above DOH clean levels. So, folks, we're that glass of water you're drinking, I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. Triple Hospital, 1981, Building 113, UST underground storage tank evacuation. Yet another one. Triple, October 1998. Another one. Underground storage tanks. So all these, and here's another triple. Five different triplers. Animal quarantine, and many of you may remember this, where I tell you about the oil leaking and bubbling up out of the ground. The animal quarantine station is located in Halaba Valley Road in Aiea. The parcel of land the station is on was previously owned by Navy. An unknown tar-like substance was found at several locations seeping through the ground, asphalt, and in that parking lot. 15 borings, and anyway, tar samples had detects of acetone, barium, cadmium, chromium, and lead under regulatory standards. Samples taken in 2004 detected TPH in the three samples and exceeded SAL, and the petroleum sample indicated high levels of TPH above SALs. Methyl naphthalene, 2-methyl naphthalene, fluorine, phenothrine, pyrene, and chrysine. So these are constituents that were found in military oil, and also the tar pits that were used up there. And so the question is, what are we going to do with all of this? Well, you best maybe want to get on the phone and call the governor and ask him. Even if the military and the EPA are sleazy enough to deny the people the right to know what is going on in any new developments, why are you condoning it? Why are you participating? Why are your appointees tolerating and participating and exacerbating the problem and concealing information from the public? What is it that we would do to trigger a cover-up or to impede a cover-up? Wouldn't that be a good thing if the public knew? Wouldn't that be a good thing if some families up there may be being impacted? And they would like to have a choice of, if they know that there's contamination, they would want to go and have water from other sources. Or put a system in to try to address this water, the impacts of it. I don't know, folks, but I can only tell you, this might be paradise, but we're going to pay big time when it comes environmentally. We are going to pay big time, and probably paying it already in high health costs and all of those things. And it's a struggle. You know, on one hand, we say we don't want a system that give free medicines and this and that, and we don't want to be a socialist government. But then when you turn and look, it's the government who's poisoning you, both at state, city, federal. They're poisoning you. They should give you free medical care any damn way. You should have it without even asking. because they should be able to know. Forget the either side of the aisle who wants to be politically correct and not making this a socialist government. When you know that we are so neglecting in our efforts, neglecting to protect the environment and subjecting people to dirty water, dirty air, dirty land, and then you struggle to give medical care and monitoring and evaluations that people can't afford, you guys are going to hell. I mean, it's just bottom, if there is such a thing. Or maybe it is hell now. You probably struggle to look at yourselves in the mirror in the morning. Maybe it's, life is hell. But I wouldn't want to participate in that. And that's what it is. It's a cover-up on the grandest scale. And this isn't about, I hate the government and I hate... No. I love the government. But the problem is, the government doesn't seem to have the same kind of love for us. It's stability, I believe. All of that. But their activities and their actions just does not seem... And what's really good about this, from the highest level of government to the lowers, from the people that have money and think they never have to interact with the man that does not have any money, you're going to be affected just like the rest of us poor bunnies. That's the... If there's any benefit to this or joy, see, you can't escape this. One planet, one place to live. You can poison us, but then you're doing it yourself. You can get money and you can have prestige, but you're poisoning yourself and your family and your generations of to come. So think about it. I'm not begging you. I'm just trying to remind you that certain things, money don't matter. So when you're out breathing air and you're out there on the golf course and that golf course used dirty soil with contaminants brought in from Makalapa, Radford High School, military base, Hickam, and will spread on the golf course, and you're out there and you got your $1,000 golf club. Club now, not clubs. And your personal built golf cart parked by your Maserati. Guess what, guys? Take a good strong whiff of the soil. You can't escape it. Your friends are poisoning you while they're poisoning us. So all of you that think you're insulated and think that this is a radical environmentalist talking, I'm saying to you, in this community called Hawaii, we're all being poisoned in one way or another. You're going to get your share. I don't care if you never go into Kalihi and live and breathe the asbestos and all of the contaminants that are left there and dumped there on the streets and on the sidewalks and whatever. You'll get your share. One thing about corruption, it's an equal opportunity victimizer. It don't discriminate. So maybe we should rethink this, and maybe we should rename and reappoint. And Dr. Virginia Plessler, I mean, you talking about a shameful thing. None of this should happen. Everything is drawn out, drag out. I have a request for documentation, and you got to hear this one. I'm asking for records a couple of months now. Emails, we all know that emails are public record, unless there's an exception or something. So they're not objecting to giving them to me, but they say, well, we've deleted them all because we don't have any hard drive space, so we just deleted them. Oh, really? So where then are the records for anything? We have a problem, Houston, and the problem ain't a space shuttle. It's the satellite we live on. And if we keep this up, maybe we'll all... One thing, we'll all lose weight. We won't be fat. We'll be so skinny, and our bones will be showing from the cancerous oozes and the cancerous sickness. So maybe it'll be a good thing. We'll lose weight and won't be fat or something. But anyway, we'll talk to you next week, and sad note there to leave you on, but it's the truth, folks. Our government goes behind closed doors to tell us nothing and to sit there and strategize on how to lie to us about water that's contaminated with the EALs and the no standards and the specific risk base. So we're going to do a story, hopefully, on talking in this same vein, an auto parts dealer who stores many, many cars, haven't gotten a permit. He's been fined and over $100,000, and yet he's allowed to pay $500 and don't come into compliance each month as a settlement agreement. You go figure that one out. But we'll see you next week. Take care.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI Honolulu.